Ladies, gentlemen, boys and girls, I am Golf Lover UK, and I am joined by look how beautiful he looks on his new computer and the higher resolution prettiness of Pro Golf Critic. So if you didn't have enough Pro Golf Critic, look how pretty he looks.
When our, as we sort of elevate, we're allowed to get a little bit more investment into new equipment. Things are going to up level a little bit more. So that's where we're trending at this point. So yeah, we're moving in the right direction for sure.
Yeah, look, I was talking about it the other day to someone that I think eventually at some point, if we can get a bit more investment in there, that it would be nice to have some form of podcast studio. The difficulty is I can't afford the flights for you.
Yeah, we'll have to meet someplace in the middle. Got some ideas on that, but.
And I can't get you to move to Florida. You just
not
wouldn't
happening.
Do it for
not
easier
happening.
Times.
I mean, we could
have. What about Carolina?
Might have Carolinas? You might you'd have like some the something there. That's it's obviously my home state when it comes to my college. So and there's we'll have to discuss that offline. But yeah,
if I was to move to anywhere in America right now, I think I'd go to Charlotte or Raleigh just because Raleigh's got a flight every third day to the UK. Charlotte's got a flight daily to the UK, and it's a 7.5-8 hour flight. So that's really good. And it's that Eastern time. No one's tuned in.
You've got to call it Raleigh, by the way, for the US audience, or else they're going to have no idea what you're talking about. So Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay. Well, they've named it after a place called Raleigh in the UK. So like, just call it that as well. It's like I'm from Hereford and you guys call it Hereford. No, trust me guys, there are some E's in there. I promise you if you look closely, it's not Hereford, Hereford. There actually are some E's.
We could go on and on for British pronunciations versus American pronunciations, so we'll move on to golf stuff.
All right. And on that note, aluminum, right, I'm gonna move on. I was told off today. So I played golf with a guy called Midlife Golfer, and really lovely bloke, guy called Pete. We played today. We were four up. Me and my uncle were four up through nine, and then we were one up through 17. Stood on 17. Luckily we hung on, but there we are. But no, lovely guy. But he did say something. He said, and it's great. I don't mind criticism. It's good to get it. And he actually said, look, podcast is great. He said, but you and Jay talked about, you went, oh, Jay, but you love that type of course. And you went, yeah, but you, and Jay said, Ben, you like that type of course. And he said, but for those of us that don't know you and haven't been listening for the first 10 episodes, we don't know what you mean by what you like. And I was like, fair criticism.
They just have to listen to all of them.
Just to answer that.
It's not going to take that much time. There's only 20 plus episodes. Just go back and listen to every single podcast we've done.
Right. But in short, so people don't know who are listening to this, you're not a big fan of Florida style open courses like that, which is why I don't get why you don't like Valhalla. Do you mean like when you talk about what you like, you don't have to like Valhalla. But you don't like that. You don't like that Florida style golf.
Here's where I'm at. So we also have to distinguish between courses that I like to play and courses that I like to see on TV. Like, yes,
that is a different. That is different.
And some of them are exactly the same. Like, I would love to play Pebble Beach all the time. It shows great on TV. Cypress Point, same. I could go through the list. Shinnecock Hills, Oakmont, all those, they show great on TV. Doral, I think, shows great on TV. I like to play all those courses. Some of those, I don't think, like, I would like to play, but they don't necessarily show great on TV. They don't encourage, like, a creative style of golf.
Yeah. No, I get that. Right. Well, we will do more on our favorite courses and what course we want to play in the future. We've done that before. Let's talk now about something that's really important. So I just called that now and I've already lost it. Where are we? There we are. So I was looking at the running order for today's show. So a bit of a Masters review, which will include Ludvig Åberg, Scotty and his style of winning, some stuff on ratings, future golf, and Rory. Now,
I could go on a riff on Rory, but I'm going to let you go first.
Yeah. Let's do listeners a favor. Let's not talk about the Rory to live stuff, because it's been done to death at the moment. And all I'll say on it is, no one's gone until they've gone. No is a no until it's a yes. And five of the people playing on live have pledged fealty and said they'll never go. So does it mean Rory's going? But it doesn't mean he isn't ever going to go, or things might change and things.
Things are changing. I do think we need to address the fact things are changing very, very quickly. The last month, things of all of the people that I've talked to, things have changed almost 180. It's kind of like a Rory McIlroy's totally flipped. So I think that we are going to see some level of coming together here over the next, few weeks. I've been told sometime in the next week or two, we're going to get more information about how this is going to look. Who knows? There could be things to sort of postpone this, but it seems like we're going to get some information on this prior to Adelaide in a week and a half.
Yeah. Look, let's see what comes out. Look, we could do under Future Golf. We'll just do a little bit on that later at Future Golf right at the end. So those of you that want to hear mine and Jay's predictions and thoughts, we'll time each other. I will do a 3 minute and Jay will do a 3 minute, and we'll time each other to not go past that. Otherwise it's 10:21 in the UK in the evening. And I've got to take two of my good friends tomorrow, just sub 70, for some fittings. And I'm going to get some more clubs again. Getting some more clubs off the guys sub 70. I'm so well looked after by them, mate. They're absolutely. I hit a 5-iron today, 221 yards. And the guy's playing with just playing this club using this cheating stick. I'm like, yeah, probably is, mate. Yeah, probably is. Don't get me wrong, we're slightly elevated by about 40 good. Foot. But hey, right, let's stop. Masters review. I want your thoughts rating the tournament out of 10 on these three things: excitement of event, where it fits in the legacy and pantheon of the Masters history, and talking points of that tournament. What have we got from it? So Give me your score to 10, first of all, for that excitement.
Excitement,
of the
event. I'll probably have to give it a 3. And the only reason why I'm giving.
By the way, guys, folks, we're not being horrible at the Masters. I'm going to go out there. The Masters is my second favorite tournament in the world after the Open. And if the Open don't go change the roster up a little bit, it might end up being my favorite. So I'm not hating the Masters.
Well, the other thing is, the Masters is my favorite event, so that's the reason why I have to grade it somewhat harshly. Leading into it, there was obviously a little bit of controversy that maybe we don't have all of the best players in the world in this event, and I could list for you 6 or 7 players from LIV that aren't there. I'm not going to do that now. You just look at my tweets. You'll be able to see every single player I'm talking about. So that's going to take it down a notch. And I think that there's a chance in the next year or two, unless things change, which it seems like it will, but we'll have to see. If things aren't fully changed, it could continue to deteriorate. So I think that's a big one. I've got to knock it down a few pegs. Two, in terms of excitement of the tournament, usually Sunday in the Masters is something that I'm really, really excited about, really pumped about. I was tweeting on Saturday, as soon as Bryson dumped his third shot in the water on 15, that like I felt like it was kind of over at that point, because he was the only person that I considered in the top few players that could challenge that. Posed enough of a challenge to Scottie Scheffler to make Scottie Scheffler think twice about, oh, I've got this guy right behind me that is like really putting the pressure on. I don't think that Scottie was, I don't think he felt any pressure by any of the other guys that are there, whether it be Ludwig, whether it be Max Homa, whether it be Colin Morikawa. I don't think that he felt any pressure, and that just sort of took away a little bit from the event for me.
So that's your 3 on the excitement. I get that. Now, in case people are not understanding what I mean by legacy and talking points, legacy is where is this going to sit in the pantheon of events? Where is this going to sit in this and the other? And talking points is, in 10 years' time, Is there anything we're going to talk about from this event?
No.
Is anything going, well, do you remember that? So where does it fit for you for legacy out of 10? And then we'll do legacy out of 10.
Legacy is probably a 2. Talking points is probably a 1. And the reason why I have been comparing this basically to, and look, I love Bubba Watson. I think that he's one of my favorite players on LIV. That being said, his second Masters is not that memorable that he won. Like 2014, I know it because I could name all of the Masters champions since I was born. But 2014 wasn't that exciting. He won by a fairly comfortable margin. Like there wasn't – Jordan Spieth was really, really young. Like I think he finished in second. And, you know, there were some other players that like competed in that. But it's not very – it isn't memorable. It's memorable for being his second Masters. Just like this, the only thing that we're going to remember from this is that it's Scottie Scheffler's second Masters that he won. So I don't think that this is that memorable. I think that it's, like I said on Twitter, it's in my bottom 5 Masters from the last 20 years. I just it didn't have a lot of juice. It wasn't that competitive. Scottie Scheffler, like I've said a million times, he just does not have that star quality that's going to attract the casual fan. So, and we've seen this in the ratings. Unfortunately, it's down 20%. So I think.
Don't jump to ratings.
It's a part of the equation. Like these are all a part of the reason why less people were interested. I've had a ton of people tweet me support of it saying, I wasn't that excited after the first few holes when it was pretty clear he's going to win. Because Ludvig is a very good young player. I just think that he's not seasoned at all. People are crowning him like he's going to win 12 majors. Shout out to the person in my DMs is telling me he's going to win 12, which is insane. I just don't think that he's on that level. And we're just going to have to see how his career pans out. Yes, he's talented. There's a lot. History is littered with players that have been super, super talented that showed some promise and then fell at some point. So we can't just assume that he's going to be some great generational player.
Well, let's have a look then at my thoughts on that. Now, excitement. I'm going to go higher than you. I'm going to go, actually, it was a 6 for excitement.
For earlier in the week.
Where have you come from? It's a 6 for excitement.
Yeah.
The first day and a half.
I agree.
That first day and a half when Bryson was playing like a phenom. Yep. Scheffler was playing superbly well. Max Homer had an absolute stunning out of nowhere first two rounds. Like, as in, like, he was just quiet, and all of a sudden he's just played really well. And then you start. You sort of like halfway through the second day, and like Max Homer's sitting on 6 under, and Scheffler's on 6 under, and Bryson's on 7, and then obviously Bryson fell away. So I think actually, after that, how you said this, I said, if I'm Fred Ridley, there's a lot of things that change. If I'm Fred Ridley, I'm actually gutted in some ways that it started like that. It might have been actually better if it was just a procession of Scotty, because actually, it was almost like,
yeah, it got people's hopes up and then it fell flat. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. And you look at the ratings, it's like Thursday, Friday beat the last 3-4 years ratings because Bryson was trading blows with Scotty. And who doesn't want to watch that? And legacy, where is this going to fit under legacy now? I didn't actually compare it to Bubba one. I compared it to Faldo's third.
Which one that Faldo didn't beat?
Was that second or the third?
Well, 89, he won a playoff versus Scott Hoke. And then 90 was the one that like was not that memorable. And then 96 is the Greg Norman.
Yeah. So it was the mid.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really remember one. That one.
So his second. Yeah. You're not that much younger than me.
I was not watching.
You're like three months younger than me.
Stop it. TV. I just wasn't. The first Masters that I remember is 95.
Well, I wasn't, other than Faldo, because Faldo is English. I didn't watch any really real golf at all, other than Faldo being English. I didn't really watch much golf at all for a period of 10 years in the middle. But you can go back and look at it, and he was a bit like that Faldo. It's his second Masters. He's done really well. He's announced himself legacy-wise on the thing. I know we have opinions about OWGR. All I'll say is what he's done with OWGR is that I think I read that he can miss 16 consecutive cuts and stay at number one because he's that far ahead of second place. But he's legacy-wise. But what does it really mean? And it feels a shame. And then on the talking points piece, I read an article. It was made me really quite sad that all anyone's going to talk about from this one is the LIV versus PGA Tour narrative that was just driven by loads of the media. And that for me is quite sad. I remember being sat in that hotel on the Thursday night, and I did one of my daily sermons, which have become not quite daily anymore. My daily sermon, I've done it daily for 2.5 months, and then I went on holiday and I've not got back into the groove, but I promise I will. And I just remember listening to Dame Laura Davis just like completely let herself down, like one of my favorite commentators, and all she did was just like, well, I don't think there are any stats, no one knows how they've been playing on LIV. Turn the telly on, love, it's your job.
Yes.
You're literally a golf goat. And I think that for me is the talking point. And I think what we're trying to encapsulate there is that we've lost a lot in this event that we could have had. And it's a real shame. It was a real shame.
And not everyone can be a great, great one, though. That's the other thing. Like, not every Masters is going to be a good. So, like, last year was great. And then 2022 was, it wasn't that good. 2021 wasn't great. 2020 DJ winning was awesome. Tiger winning 2019 was amazing. So you could go down the line. Like, yeah. I mean, it's like every few years you're going to have kind of a stinker Masters in this.
What about Rory's one?
Oh, the one where he almost won 2018. Yeah, that was, oh man. Yeah, he probably should have won that, honestly. But, and that was one of the highest rated Masters of recent memory, partially because of him. Partially because Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, they were both in contention that last day. It was electric. It was that one as far as like star power, drama, like that one was an amazing Masters 2018. People sort of knock it because Patrick Reed won. I elevate it because it was filled with drama and stars, which is exactly what the Masters and any major championship needs.
I think you've helped me here is that I need to remember sometimes not every major can be great.
That's fair.
Sometimes you have a US Open at Wyndham, Clark wins. And that's not me picking on Wyndham Clark. Like, that was a really boring.
Well, US I mean, Open, the, even that one had its moments. Like it had Rory in contention, had the weird drop situation on 14. Like, I mean, it had some interesting components. It could have been better for sure. Mm-hmm. And there were certain things that they did that like lessened it a little bit. So, you know, it's just what it is. But I would much rather have that US Open at LACC than the Masters that we just had.
Let's move on now to Scotty Scheffler. And again, it's not going to be 7 hours on Scotty, but I'm going to say three things. Scotty is inarguably the best golfer in the world right now.
Yeah, I can't make a case for it anymore. No.
Could you say there are...
It's fine.
Yeah, he even you've gone, well, look, okay, you love Rahm, you love Brooks, you love Bryson.
Yeah, I need to see more from those guys moving forward in the majors. I was very disappointed. So
he's not an exciting star. So he is a star player, but he is not a superstar personality. And I went on yesterday with Marco on his new podcast, and I'm saying it's MJ. MJ's a superstar. MJ's a superstar. Like he just he not only was he the best player, but he's also a superstar. Jordan, people turn their TVs on. And people knew yeah. Michael Jordan outside the sport. And like I asked five people at the golf club today, I was just chatting. I said, do me a favor, just answer this question. I said, I know it's a random question. I said, if I showed you a picture of Ian Poulter and Scottie Scheffler out of golf clothes walking down the street, are you 100% sure you'd be able to say if it was them or not? And three said they wouldn't be sure it was Scottie yeah. Scheffler. And they're golf fans.
Yeah.
And I think that's just like a, I know it's an anecdote. I know it's a small sample size. I know it's easy to pull that apart. But the point being is that even someone like Polk's or Westy, I actually said Polk's or Westy, who are notoriously famous golfers, but haven't right. won in the same way that Scottie's won. And aren't currently world number one like Scottie is.
They're bigger stars. They've got more confidence. They have more star just, quality. They have more star yeah, quality and, than Scottie than Scottie Scheffler does. Like yeah. it's
And then I'm going to say, and I think the problem is that you've either got to be a star on the course or off the course to have that pizzazz. Now, Tiger didn't really have that pizzazz off the course, did he? Let's be honest. Mm. He really didn't. For the first 15 years of his career, outside of going to Hooters and whatever else, he really was golf, 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 golf. He had someone like John Daly who was golf and off the course. You had other players like Poulter with his trousers and his whatever. Like, I don't think it's daft and like with the way they spoke at Ryder Cups. And Phil had like that personality where he did videos on social media years before and all that content. Tiger didn't do as much. Scottie doesn't do anything off the course. And unlike Tiger and unlike Rory and unlike DJ, is not a go-for-the-throat golfer. In the way that if Rory gets one or two ahead, he gets seven ahead. Tiger, the amount of times Tiger's just gone destroyed a field. What Scottie does is he goes, I'm going to shoot 11, 12, under par, 13 under par. I'm going to keep it nice and simple. And if you guys crumble, I'll win. It's not that go-for-it style. I think he doesn't have that star power on the course.
It's not necessarily the personality either. Like, that's something I need to be very, very clear to people. Like, there is this – the main thing I tell people, it's all about having an identity. Tiger, no matter what he did off of the course, because he was so unique and he was so completely different than anything that we had previously, he is the biggest superstar we've ever had in golf. For that reason, like, basically almost everybody on the planet knows who Tiger Woods is, whether you're a golf fan or not, because he has this identity. He's this golfing genius who started when he was very, very young. He's the youngest winner of the Masters. He won it in record margin. He's one of the greatest. He's a top one to two player of all time. You can't even argue that he's outside the top two. All those things made him extremely identifiable. And he was extremely marketable. Like, no one has made more off of the course than Tiger Woods. Like, all of these add to his star quality. And it's the reason why he is the biggest star that we've ever had in golf. He has an identity.
And it's not personality. You're right. It's not personality. I think
Scottie's like his personality too. That's the funny part.
He comes across.
That's the funny part. I really like Scottie Scheffler. I like his personality. He's a man of God.
Yeah.
He's a man of conviction. Like, we need more of that. The problem is, if you're looking for people with star quality, that's not it. So it's completely different.
No. Right, so that's Scottie done. What we're saying essentially is we really so just let's clip this up. I'll use a social media clip because I think it'll amuse people. So what we're saying, Jay, we both really like Scottie, correct?
Yeah.
Love his personality. Love the fact he's a man of God, man of conviction. We both think he's the best golfer in the world. Number one, rightfully, is the best golfer. But equally, he's not a superstar in dragging eyes.
And we also need to address, I've heard many people just like start overrating him in history. We need to slow down with these.
That always happens. That always happens. In the moment, it always happens.
It's part of the reason why every time people start talking about these players in this historical context, whether it's Scotty, whether it's Ludwig, whether it's whoever, I have to knock them down a few pegs just so that people keep perspective on who these guys actually are.
It's when like, I know I'm not going to mention the name of the podcast because they boil my piss. When they say, well, they're going to win 6 or 7 majors. No, winning 3 majors is really, really hard. Winning 3 or 4 majors is really hard. How many people have won 4 majors in modern era of golf? Because obviously in the old era of golf, it was easier with smaller fields, blah, blah, blah. In the modern era of golf, I think it's like 12 people have won 4 majors.
I don't know the exact number. I can list them out, but like I don't want to waste any time.
But it's not many people. So let's stop pretending it's an easy thing to do. Right. So we've done Scotty Moore. We like him. Now we're going to go on to Ludwig Åberg. I've been very vocal. You've been very vocal. Christ, you've been vocal. But I've been vocal in that I think that all of your comments, and I completely understand them, I thought it was not fair of you not to just go, but by the way, he did play really well. And I think all was missing from, because I agree with you. I agree with you on the fact he's been, like, people, you're going to talk about Matty Wolff, and like, I completely agree. People forget, like, what Åberg has done has been done before by 3 or 4 other players. And while I'm not saying he's not great, history does repeat itself. And you can go, I'm not taking your point. But I do think you could have just gone, hey, I'm going to make some points about Ludwig. But Christ, he did play well. Do you know what I mean? That's the thing I think was missing from what you said.
No, I know what you mean. You know what I mean? I purposefully left all of that out. Number one, because it's... Well, yeah, because it's...
Left the nice bits out.
When people are like, are going crazy over some guy, like, again, this is my whole thing in a nutshell. I am here. My purpose in the golf world is to center the conversation. When people get too high on a player, I'm going to knock them down. When people get too low on players, I'm going to build them up, because we need to have some sort of a balance. The golf media right now is completely out of balance. Every single LIV player is not as good, is better than they say, basically. And every single player on the PGA Tour isn't as good as they make them out to be. That is just how the golf media has been ever since the schism came about 2 years ago. So my whole...
I heard a great line, right? It was someone said, someone was criticizing Reed, who finished 12th. I think finishing 12th.
Never saw him on TV, though.
Incredible.
That's another story.
Like,
nope.
Didn't see him on TV. And so it didn't seem to be, but someone said, finishing 12th is disappointing, result. I'm thinking it really isn't a disappointing result, because if you rank the top 30 players in the world, Patrick Reed isn't in the top 30 at the moment. He's probably not in the top 45 or 50. He's not had a great year. So I think finishing 12th is great. And then in the same breath, they're saying how amazing it was to see Sepp Straka finish 16th. I'm like,
to keep things, keep things in perspective, Patrick Reed... out of 54 players on LIV is 30th in the standings this year. So, and he's finishing 12th in the Masters. That is, I predicted he was going to have a good Masters because he's that good of a player. And I think he elevates when he gets to Augusta. That being said, he's not even in the top 25 players on LIV right now. So, and there is a lot of players in between 1 and 30 that have been left out. So, look, I love Patrick Reed. I think he had a great finish. I think that the LIV honestly had a pretty good showing at the Masters. Could they have done better? Yes. Did I predict they were going to do better than they did? Yes. That being said, if you really look at the numbers, they basically outperform the stats at every single major, because they're only making up roughly 12, 13% of the field, and they're making up 30% of the top 10. Yeah.
I get it. So, do you want to look?
I can talk more about Ludwig too. Like,
I've teased. No. Yeah, that's what you do. I'm not asking you to defend yourself. You don't need to defend yourself. But I think what happens is that in the short form that Twitter can be, the larger point you're trying to make isn't that Åberg isn't a good player. Isn't that Åberg might not be a great player. It's just to slow your roll.
Yes.
Because we've seen this before.
And honestly, like,
I don't think a lot of people just read it as you. A lot of people just went, Jay likes Liv. He's bashing Oberg.
Sadly,
you weren't doing that. Mm-hmm. So make the point that you're making about that.
I wouldn't even call him Oberg's a great player. Yet. He's very good. He's a very good for his experience.
Okay. Yeah, but what I mean is that. Yeah, let's see. So he's had a great result. He's a very good player.
100%.
But we've seen this happen before. So explain that Wolf thing and the other thing about how we've seen this. Wolf had a great season.
These are the things that get lost to history. Like, people pump up these players partially because, look, as I've already talked about, the PJ Tour spin machine, their marketing machine, is very, very good at pumping up guys that have a good few weeks, a good few months, and a good year, just like what they've done with Ludwig. Ludwig's not the first player they've done this with. They've done it with Max Homa. They've done it with a bunch of other players. Matt Wolf is one of those players that they did. When Matt Wolf was coming out of Oklahoma State 5 years ago, he was called the Zion Williamson of college golf because he was that good. He was considered a generational talent because he was extremely long off the tee. He was pretty straight. He had a great short game. Like, he was an elite player, like top of the top. He comes out, he's 20 years old. He wins on the PGA Tour. Like, he's only been pro for like a month or two and he wins. Like, that's amazing. And then within his first year, he's also finishing top five in two majors, not one. He's got a runner up and a fourth place in majors within his first year that he was a professional. So when you stack up that early win with two high finishes in majors, that is more than what Ludwig has done to this point as a professional. I'm not saying Ludwig can't surpass that if he continues on his trajectory and has a good 3-4-5 year stretch. He certainly can't. He's not done it yet. And we can't make the assumption that he's going to do it. So when Matt Wolf came out, he came out with Victor Hovland and he came out with Colin Morikawa. Those were seen as like the three elite players from that rookie class. Matt Wolf at that point was seen as the number one player of those three. Now you probably look back and you're like, oh, Matt Wolf is the third of those players. Hovland is probably one. Morikawa is two. And Matt Wolf is three. That just shows you how fast things can change in a very small amount of time. So I need everybody to pump the brakes. Whenever there's a young player that does something good, you should praise him 100%. We can't crown him and make him some all-time great immediately, because there's been a lot of examples of players that have showed promise. They have a couple good results.
And I don't think it helps a player. I don't think it helps a player.
Say again? No, it doesn't.
It helps the player.
And this is part of the problem that I have with the PGA Tours. They do this to every player. They've been doing it to Jake Knapp ever since he won on the PGA Tour. If you go back with in the last few years, they've done this with virtually every player, every young player that's won a PGA Tour event. They're not all that good. Some of them will elevate and turn out to be really good, like Scottie Scheffler has done. He's won two majors, like Colin Morikawa has done. He's won two majors. We just need to pump our brakes with getting too excited about these guys and crowning them before the time is right. I'll tell everybody when the time is right to crown these guys.
I love that. That is going to rile so many people. It's your job to tell them when it's all right.
I know.
It's a good job. It's a good job. You're my friend.
I tell people all the time, bring it.
Right. Let's get on to the business.
I back up every single one of my takes with data. You know this.
Yeah, the thing is, like, whether you're right or wrong, in your opinion, you've always got what you believe to be the correct evidence to back that up.
Absolutely.
Like, it doesn't mean you're right. And I'm not saying, I'm just playing the other. It doesn't mean you're right. Your opinion could be wrong. But you believe it's right because you've gone away and done your research and got the figures that you think support what you think is the right answer. Like, and a lot of this isn't 2 + 2 = 4. A lot of it is subjective.
However, I will say every strong opinion that I have, I fully back up and other opinions that other people have, they can't back it up. So anything that I put up there, trust me, there are, I've thought about this for a very long, long time. I've analyzed data. I've analyzed numbers. I've analyzed results. I've analyzed history because I've been following golf very, very closely for almost 30 years. I have a good perspective for what people need to do to get to the level that they are saying that they are already at. And most of the times they're not there. So that's a big one that I need to sort of get out there to people so that hopefully people can understand this a little bit better.
Right. Let's have a look now at a bigger concept, not a bigger concept, bigger queer question and query. And the thought is, why can't Rory McIlroy win the Masters? Because let's go through his game. Top five driver of the ball ever. Top 2-3 driver of the ball in the world alive now. Yep. Superb iron player. Butch Harmon wasn't on your commentary, and Butch Harmon was talking about the lessons he's doing with Rory, and I can maybe touch on some of that because you wouldn't have heard it. Has issues with his approach game and his wedge game, and Butch was talking about those. And Rory's been a fairly good putter. Why can't he win the Masters?
There's so, one reason. Give me your thoughts. One reason only. And it's the most important skill in golf. You mentioned a lot of really important skills. The thing that separated a lot of great players is everything they have in their mental game. And his mental game right now, ever since he had that collapse in 2011 where he was the guy, he was went into the final round leading by four, a chance to win his first major. He fell apart. Let's just call a spade a spade. He had a very, very rough final round. He shot 80. He didn't even finish in the top 10. That has been lingering, and every time, every year that he doesn't win the Masters, it just keeps accumulating scar tissue. 2018 was a really big one for him, too. Like, 2018, I felt like he had a great chance of winning that. And he was right there with Patrick Reed, final round, and there was just a couple holes where he needed to capitalize. He needed to strike. He didn't do it. And you could see his whole vibe, his whole energy, his demeanor totally changed. Where he wasn't the Rory McIlroy. Like, when he's out there dominating tournaments, that's a wholly separate Rory McIlroy than what we see at the Masters.
When he's walking with a strut.
Yes.
Watch out. Like that's what I'm on about Scotty in that different style. Like Scotty's like, I'll just post 200-300 a day each day, and if you guys beat me, you guys beat me. You probably won't, but I'll do this. Rory's like, nah. I'm gonna go 65, 63, 67, 70 and just stand in his throat. And I think that's why he didn't win at
St. Andrews, LACC. These things like start adding up, and like it's not just about the Masters. Yeah.
It's scar tissue, isn't it?
We're talking 10 years since he's won a major. Like, this is not something that's like just been one or two times. We're talking about, we've got 10 years of accumulation here. So this is a huge problem for him. And it's something that we've seen glimpses of him breaking out of this, just like what he did. Like, even 2 years ago, the Masters, when he shot 64 in the final round, the problem is he was kind of already out of it at that point, but he was like, all of a sudden you saw that Rory strut at the Masters that we hadn't seen in a while. He needs to find a way to sort of channel that into the Masters. And honestly, I've already said the way that I think that he does this, he needs to go to LIV Golf. He needs to leave Florida. He needs to move. He needs to move to the UK. He needs to be removed from all the bad energy that's been around him the last few years. Like, he needs to like extract himself, because he does that, all of a sudden there's less pressure on him from the people that have from the golf media. It's been I've seen people in the golf media call him their king. Like, this is like crazy. So like he needs to alleviate himself from that burden. And honestly, I think him going to live is the one thing that's going to alleviate this burden. It's going to free him up. He's going to come into these majors more under the radar. And I think that's his best chance of winning one.
He's got no majors, he does
for the ones that he's won. So not for the US Open, because it's been over 10 years, except he's got it for the PGA. He's got it for the Open.
He's got the PGA and he's got the Open. And I just don't see him.
They'll find a way to invite him. They'll find a way to invite him to those other two majors. Just like Tiger this year.
Yeah, so that was my thinking. Just go.
Even though he doesn't have any exemptions left, they're going to find a way to invite him to the U.S. Open, I promise you. So that's the main thing. Like, a year ago, I was very, like, anti-Rory. I felt like he could not – he was never going to win another major just with the current setup and the current vibe that he had. He's obviously made a lot of changes the last 6 months. And he had a reasonable finish at the Masters. Like, he finished 22nd. Like, he tied with Waco. He tied with a lot of other, top players. He didn't play poorly. I mean, did he play up to his level of expectations? No. And I think it also held him back that he played those first two rounds with Scottie Scheffler, who was leading after a couple days or was in the top two.
So let me give you my thoughts on what Butch was talking about. Because obviously Butch is big, basically, like, Dan, how embarrassing for Dan Rappaport saying, I can confirm Butch Harmon definitely isn't working with Rory McIlroy. And like, he is not only working with him, but he confirmed he has been. And Butch Harmon talked about it extensively for 5 days on Sky, how he's working for him.
Tough look for Dan, for sure. Anyway. But he owned it, though. Dan Rappaport, shout out to him. He did own it a little bit and said he was wrong, and he was able to backtrack it. I need to see more of that energy in the media, but go ahead.
What he was saying was Rory sometimes hits pitching wedges or gap wedges when he could be hitting a slightly higher and lower. People get, so I'll use the correct vernacular. He is hitting a gap wedge when actually he could hit a pitching wedge, saw it off, reduce the spin, not send it up in the air. So he was talking about how Rory hits a lot of full shots and he doesn't hit enough of the sawn off shots. Like, I'm just thinking of someone who is a great sawn off shot player. And the first person that comes to mind, bizarrely, is Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry's been a fantastic, when he won his mate, Shane Lowry's been a fantastic player of the hitting a pitching wedge instead of a gap. And just soaring off a little bit off the top of that, slightly lower trajectory, less spin. And he was talking a lot about that. And twice, it must have been day one, because I was in the hotel. And Rory coming into three
at
par five.
At Augusta? No, it's two. Two and eight.
Three is the
drivable par four.
So he's the bunker in the front, and bunker in front. He ran the side there. So he drove it up to the bunker. Okay, went up to the top of the bunker and sort of drove around. And he had about 50, 60 yards in, and he just didn't quite saw it off properly. Then there was another occasion where he's just trying to to spin it too much rather than just sort of get it
for
there.
Sure.
If that 100%. Makes sense, he was taking like a short, almost taking a shorter backswing and being really fast into the back of the ball and sending up and spinning up. And he was also talking about how Rory did that. Rory hit a 9-iron, and he's like, why not just hit an 8? Just hit an 8, hit an easier 8. And Butch was talking quite extensively about that and about the work they'd done together. And forgive me if I got the hole wrong, I'm pretty sure it was 3. But then there was a few holes later on 6 or 7. Hellman 7, I think, when he did it, and he's hit that 9 in. Yeah. He's like, well, just hit an 8. Just saw an 8 off, take a little bit off there. Because what Rory was doing is getting the ball up and it's spinning and it stalls. And actually, if you have a look, how many times Rory was 25 foot to 30 foot short of a flag, rather than maybe being closer, because the ball gets up, stalls, spins, comes.
Yeah.
And that's what he's talking about. Look, Butch Hellman is a way better coach than you and I. Yeah. but the point being, he was talking about that and about, and he basically said, without being horrible, until Rory can do this better.
The funny thing is, Rory is capable. He's fully capable of hitting all the shots. There's no question in my mind. I've seen him do it. This goes into the mental side where he gets into these modes where he's just going go, go, go. And it's like, he's not thinking about that. He's going go, go, go. And the funny thing is the player that first comes to my mind being able to hit those shots better is actually Patrick Reed. If you were to combine Patrick Reed with Rory McIlroy, they'd win 20 majors. Because if you were to give Patrick Reed Rory McIlroy's talent, just like raw talent, like, I don't think you would find a better player than that, because Patrick Reed's got the mental side. He's got every shot you can imagine, especially short shots, short wedge shots. There's a great video the Four Aces put out with him. Talked to Caleb Surratt about, I think it was in Hong Kong, talking about wedge shots and sort of trajectory, varying trajectories. Patrick Reed is a genius at that. So is Phil. Some is a lot of guys on Live 2, but those two kind of stand out. Cam Smith is kind of another. And I think if Rory were to sort of, again, he's got to get his mental game right, where he's thinking more in that mode, he would win one of these sooner than later. I just don't think that his mental game is just quite there yet. And maybe when he gets, you know, just like a little bit older. And again, I think once he sort of removes himself from some of this other stuff a little bit more, his mind is clearer and he's able to execute.
Yeah. I couldn't really agree with you more.
Yeah. We'll have to see if he actually does it. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to do it.
The Butch stuff is interesting. Yeah. The Butch stuff is interesting because obviously, it's just the Butcher's got that. Butcher's got the right ideas, the right information, the right everything he can pull on. And you just think, well, if Butcher's saying that he needs to get this to be able to win, then Butcher's saying it. We were going to give our State of the Union sort of future of golf, right? I'm going to do 3 minutes. You've got 3 minutes when the clock starts of what you think might be happening in golf, what it could look like going forward. No one's going to hold you as prediction. 3, 2,
well, it's
1,
not exactly a prediction. Being in my being in Miami for the little bit of time that I was getting intel, and then just having all the sources that I've accumulated over the past year and a half, I've had a bit of insight into like what's going on behind the scenes and sort of how things have progressed here the last month. The biggest barrier towards these two sides, meaning Liv and the PIF and the PGA Tour coming together, I mean, it was Tiger Woods. Like, that's just what, let's call a spade a spade. You and I both heard this from enough people to know this is true. Since then, since his meeting with Yasser in the Bahamas, I guess 3-4 weeks ago at this point, this was right after the Players, they spent two and a half days together playing golf and like talk about the future of golf. Tiger, I think, is totally bought into Yasser's plan now. That much has been made very, very clear to me. What that looks like is a little bit up to interpretation. However, I have heard within the next couple weeks, we are going to get a little bit of information about what this means. This coming together, I'm not going to call it a merger because it's not a merger. We are going to maintain two completely distinct brands, PGA Tour and Live. We are going to have some crossover events. I think there's a very strong chance that high-level players on the PGA Tour, mostly Tiger Tiger and Rory are going to potentially have equity in LIV. They are going to get some sort of cash infusion because, look, they have a lot of investment in TGL and Team Golf and all that. And Yasser totally wants to make them right for sort of taking LIV and sort of getting it to the next level. So I think that's what's going to happen. I think that those two are going to be made even more rich than they already are. And I think that's basically what's going to happen. So we're going to have crossover events. LIV isn't necessarily going to get OWGR points or any other stuff. The LIV players are going to be allowed to play in certain PGA Tour events where they are able to get points. That'll be the way they get into the majors. There'll be enough events that allows them to potentially qualify. And I think that's how this is all going to net out here in the next few months. That's based off of all the information that I've heard so far. And again, reading the tea leaves and doing the analysis that I do, given the information that I have. Stop the clock. Perfect.
Oh my
mental timer. God. Mental timer.
Right. Okay. All right. The time won't go off now. It doesn't believe that you did it.
Look, when I'm motivated, I could do anything. So, you know, it's part of the deal.
I've literally got no timer on and it won't stop beeping. Listen, oh. There's no timer going.
You might have to restart the app, man.
Oh, that's annoying.
Look, I'll keep you honest. I'll keep you honest with the time.
Hang on. Well, no. I can't do a show with a phone ringing in the background.
Okay.
I had to turn the phone off. Right.
Yeah, it can't be your IT there. Sorry.
Right. So, you keep me honest.
It is what it is.
No. You keep me honest on this. You got another 3 minutes? I don't believe there's going to be a merger, but there is going to be a coming together. I believe we're going to have a league that's going to sit at the top of the World Golf Tour, give or take a different type of name. I believe that league is going to be fronted by Mr. Tiger Woods, and he'll be paid roughly £50 to £60 million a year to be the face of that league, maybe £300 million over a five-year period. What's Tiger going to get out of it? Cash, prestige, and good looks from running it. I believe LIV will exist in the way it does, but slightly change with Greg still running it. I believe the PGA Tour will exist with its puppet master of Jay Monahan being run by whoever wants to run him, and the DP Tour will exist, and they'll be given a few bones to pick apart. I think that there will be 6 to 7 events in this World Series, this World Golf Club, whatever we want to call it, and I think you'll get 35 from the top 35 from the PGA Tour's rankings, top 25 or 20 from the LIV rankings. 10 from the DP World Tour, 8 from the DP World Tour, let's say, 2 or 3 from the Asian Tour, then 2 or 3 invites. That will be settled over a season, probably this season, starting next year, and that will be a fixed run of players that will play in that. It'll be singles only. LIV will then play a slightly shorter season, so rather than being 14, I think it will go to 6. Sorry, we'll stay at 14, but I think it'll be 6 singles. 8 team events, and those 6 singles, I think they will get OWGR points. I think there'll be no team event. No team event, so to speak. You might get points because of where you finish that contribute to your team ladder, but not in the same way it's done in the past. He'll be your single event, and you might pick up 5 team points because you finished in the top 10, whatever it might be. And they will get OWGR points playing 72 holes. And then there'll be 8 team events. In those 8 team events, I think they'll be given some very small slithers of OWGR points for each team member in the top first, second, and third team. And that's what LIV will look like. And the PGA Tour will lose a few events. But we're going to have that event sitting over the top. And they'll have 1 in each continent, with maybe 2 in America and 2 in Europe. It's quite a strong, but I just feel that it just makes sense to me. Tiger's going to run it. Tiger's bought into the vision. Yazir's going to fund it. Yazir's going to do this, that, and the other. Tiger's going to help convince OWGR and the others to give LIV points because LIV's going to help fund everything else that's going on the top of there. And then what will happen is the DP World Tour will get what they need. They will get some players back. And the DP World Tour will allow all players that once had a registration with the DP World Tour who are now on LIV to go back to DP World Tour. And if players who are currently registered with LIV want to go and play DP World Tour and Asian Tour, they will be able to. I don't see next year in 2025 PGA Tour LIV players going back to the PGA Tour. I think that there'll be too many people kicking off in the result of that. Whereas actually, I think the LIV players, the DP World Tour will be grateful to have these LIV players back.
You're right on time. Great job. No, I think we pretty much we pretty much agree on this. And you know the funny part of this, and I have to give him a shout out here. Basically, like, we're kind of in the same ballpark in terms of like what this is going to look like with these crossover events. This is basically exactly what Phil Mickelson proposed to PGA Tour leadership 3-4 years ago. That if they had actually gone through with this, like LIV probably wouldn't be a thing. So I'm actually happy that they didn't.
Hi, my name's Greg. And I'd like to run 8 events. Just sit over the top and you send me your best players. We run 8 events and don't worry about it. Not taking a call.
No. But Jay. Phil went directly to Jay Monahan and Herlihy and leadership and all that. There's documentation about this that's been leaked over the past couple years. Phil's even talked about it on Twitter. Like, this happened. Like, this is like reality. And the fact that they've had this amount of negligence to all this drama that's happened in the last 2-3 years could have all been avoided if they had just like taken the phone call, listened to Phil. If Phil was PGA Tour commissioner, like, we would be living in such a better golf world by now. It's insane. So it is what it is, though. Things have happened. There's nothing we can do to rewind that clock. I need some accountability for PGA Tour leadership, though. Everybody that was around then that, like, had a chance to, like, take part of this, and now it's going to be a thing, they all need to be gone. Period.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could see a sweeping of the path, but also, can I ask a question? Do we care if they sweep the path? If you've got this big golf tour that sits over the top and is run properly and LIV's run properly and the DP World Tour's run properly and the Asian Tour's run properly, if the PGA Tour still wants to be run badly and they don't want to oust the bad leader, that's kind of on them. I'll still watch the PGA Tour because I love golf. But at the end of the day, you get treated sometimes how you allow yourself to be treated.
No, it's true.
But look, we've come to the end of our show. We've got to go. It is 11:15 at night. I've got to drive to Hereford, not Hereford. Mm-hmm. I've got to drive to Hereford in the morning. And bizarrely, there's a big aluminium, not aluminium, factory nearby. So, and colour's got a U in it. But on that note,
aluminium is one of my favorite favorite pronunciations of, like, any word. And honestly, I want to move to the UK just so I can hear people say aluminium instead of aluminum. So, you know, story for another day.
Mate, we got some crackers over here. We can say so. Like, I think sometimes we get it wrong, but because we were first, we're like,
horrendous pronunciations of some of the British towns, like you mentioned, but I'm not going to go there. We will say that for another show.
When you ask someone to say Leicestershire or Worcestershire, it's in America, it's just so much fun. Yeah, it's worth going to worry over it. Right. I've said, right, I'm going now. I've got a wife who barely gets to see me. It's her preference. But right, take care, everybody. Bye-bye.